If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews comedian Whitney Cummings, as well as Jason Jones of TBS's The Detour. Plus, they both answer a few more questions backstage just for this podcast.
Our guest is a very funny comedian who wrote, directed, and stars in the film The Female Brain, which is in select theaters and available on demand this Friday. Please welcome back to the show, Whitney Cummings, everyone. How are you?
I need help with how to sit in a suit.
It's a gorgeous suit, by the way.
I agree. I made it. What am I supposed to untie it?
Well, you could. Yeah, I unbutton when I sit down, but I don't know. I feel like this looks. I don't know.
It's incredibly uncomfortable, though.
If it's uncomfortable, you can unbutton and see how it feels.
Is this what it feels like to be a man? It's a nightmare. It's awful.
No, I think you look really natural. I want to talk about your movie, but this
Please.
Is very exciting. You're also working on the reboot of Roseanne.
Roseanne.
You were an executive
Roseanne.
Producer.
Yeah. Roseanne. Roseanne, yeah.
And
cool.
You, here's a photo of you on set,
yep.
Which is very exciting.
That's on the couch.
On the couch. What has it been like?
It's been a nightmare.
Uh-huh.
You've worked with your heroes, or you have to talk to your heroes all the time.
Yes, and at SNL, certainly.
So you're talking to me right now.
I'm just barely keeping it together. Obviously, you're a hero of mine. That's why we gave you this paper cup.
That's right. I get a lot of respect around here. You know, for me, I was so excited to work on Roseanne, and I didn't foresee how nervous I'd get around John Goodman.
Yeah.
I'm such a big fan of John Goodman.
He's the sweetest person
on earth. The nicest, the most talented. And it's weird because growing up, he was kind of like my dad, but now I kind of have a crush on him.
Yeah.
It's weird. I have bad thoughts. And I do this thing, I guess, when I get nervous around a celebrity that I'm starstruck by, I just start lying. I try to just ignore him entirely because I know I'll embarrass myself. But he asked me how my weekend was, which should have been a really quick exchange. I had been on a book tour at the time. So I was like, oh, I was on a book tour. He's like, where did you go? I was like, oh, I went to Florida, New York, St. Louis. And he was like, well, oh, I'm from St. Louis. And in that moment, I realized I had not been to St. Louis. I was going to St. Louis, but I couldn't say, actually, I just lied to you.
Right.
Like, that was... So I just had to, like, lean in. And he's like, where did you perform? And I was like, the Pantheon. Because that kind of sounds like a
sure,
theater.
Sure, yes.
Like the Paramount.
I wouldn't believe there's a Pantheon.
Right. And He's like, when did that get built? And I'm like, you don't know about the Pantheon? I mean, I'm, like, making him feel bad for not knowing about St. Louis. And then he's like, where do you stay? And I was like, the DoubleTree. And... He's like, there's a DoubleTree in St. Louis? And I'm like, the one city, there's not a DoubleTree. It's the one I like. And now I'm the window has closed for this. And if he watches this show, I am fired. But so somewhere John Goodman's trying to book a hotel at a DoubleTree that doesn't exist.
And he can't believe he can't get a show at the Athenaeum.
Totally. And like, I'm not good with meeting my heroes. I can't do it. One time, John Cleese, I did something with John Cleese.
That's one for me as well. Yep.
And he came into my dressing room and we were talking and I was just like trying to seem cool. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to like have a drink of whatever I'm drinking. It was a lit candle. Literally, it gets to here and I'm like, oh my God. You know, so I don't think I'm designed to be around my heroes.
I want to talk about, so the female brain.
By the way, I didn't bring this out here for that prop. It just worked out that way.
Look, you know what?
I am not a prop comic. I just want you to know I'm getting a migraine, so I brought this out because I need it. Just to be clear.
Oh, well, you know, we all loved the prop bit, and now you ruined it. Guys, I know you loved how I had the prop. I have a terrible migraine.
And so, my umbrella. I was fortuitous.
So this is based on a book by the same name, The Female Brain. How did you come across the book?
Do you ever shop online and the store you're shopping at, like, judges you with the purchases they suggest?
Yeah.
Yes. My Amazon, the things they suggest to me are so insulting. Like, I'll be like, I need to buy a rubber band. And it's like, did you mean chicken soup for the soul? I'm like, no. So I'm just like buying, I guess I do buy a lot of self-help books, not that I need it. And they kept suggesting users who bought this item also bought The Female Brain. And I'm like, I should just buy this because they're going to keep harassing me about it. So I finally just bought it. And then I read it and it was so empowering and interesting, and I was like, I think we should make the movie this. I asked our friend Neil Brennan if he
would
write it with me.
Neil Brennan, another very funny comedian. You guys have known each other for years.
Created the Chappelle Show with Dave Chappelle.
How was collaborating? Obviously, this is a film about how the brains are different. You guys have very different brains. How was that?
Yeah, when you write with someone, like especially of the opposite sex, it's like all the negative parts of a relationship and none of the positive parts.
Oh, right.
It was only like, it was just like fighting and driving and no sex or vacationing. So we basically just tried to make it as real as possible and we put ourselves in situations where we could actually just fight it, the actual scene out and transcribe it. So we basically just like got paid to fight all day, which
that's
is like,
not bad.
It's like my dream job.
Yeah.
So we just knocked it out and you know Neil, he's the funniest.
Great cast, Sofia Vergara, Cecily Strong, mm-hmm. James Marsden, Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin is so funny. It's unfair.
Comedy Marvel?
Comedy genius.
Legend in the making?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin, NBA superstar, is way too funny.
It's actually embarrassing to people whose first job is to do comedy.
Yeah, right.
Like, we're all just like, oh, my God, this is bad. This is, like, his hobby.
Yeah.
He's better at this. So he is such a natural, and, like, he improvised a lot of it. I can't even take credit for a lot of it. Neil knew him and, suggested and made it happen. So
that's great.
I think you'll be very
delighted. You are going to make Blake Griffin a different kind of star.
Yeah,
I
like
love it.
He needed some cash. but it's obvious he was also so tall. Thank God, Cecily, we had to put her in these huge heels just so they could fit in the same frame because Blake is so tall, it's hard to shoot him. You just see like Blake and like clouds. You know, we had to get all these special things to shoot him. It was pretty funny.
Well, well done. And always so great to see you, Whitney. Congrats on the movie.
Oh, you're so great in the Golden Globes.
Oh,
so great.
Thank you very much.
I know you're waiting for my opinion. I know you wanted to know what I thought.
Whitney Cummings, already Female Brain. It's Life Matters.
Hey, this is Kevin from Late Night. We are backstage with Whitney Cummings. Welcome, Whitney.
Thank you, Kevin.
So your movie, The Female Brain, is based on research into how the mind works. What did you find most interesting when you were reading the book and doing this research?
Oh, God, there were so many. Like, I think the thing that I loved the most about it was that it kind of positioned or framed a lot of qualities that are traditionally thought of as weaknesses that women have, sort of stereotypical things like women are sensitive and they're emotional and they're hypervigilant. The book positioned them as strengths and sort of superpowers. And I thought that was really interesting because I think our society kind of shames us to feel bad about all these things. You know, I heard a lot like women are crazy, women are psycho. And then, you know, reading the science around it, the way it was framed is like they're actually like awesome. And So that was really refreshing, and it made me feel less crazy and psycho. You know, so many people over the years call us crazy and psycho that there's a point where you kind of start to believe it. You get in your 30s and you're like, I guess I'm just a crazy psycho dog lady. And this book was just really empowering, and I thought the timing was pretty cool that it's coming out now, because it's sort of in the zeitgeist that we can all like listen to women now. It's kind of cool to empathize with women all of a sudden, which is really refreshing. And all the signs in general, like the signs that women are, we're sort of wired for consensus, but if we have enough adrenaline, we can overcome that desire and fight back. And I just like to sort of know about the method to the madness.
And there are things like gossip comes from...
Yeah, gossip has a biological basis, and our reptilian brain really wants women to gossip, because what it does is it teaches us what the social norms are, so that we adhere to the social norms of society and hence get protection from the tribe. So when we gossip, when we say like, oh my God, Lindsay lied about that thing at work, everyone wants to gossip about it. And what it's our primordial brain's way of saying like, this is how you stay in the good graces of the tribe and get protection. So we actually get dopamine when we gossip, which I thought was really interesting, because I find myself sometimes being so unable to stop gossiping. And I'm like, God, I am such a crazy high school teenager. Why do I love gossip so much? And it's because it's like you get chemical reactions in your brain, and your dopamine receptors actually get a reward when you gossip.
And do you look at your own behavior from doing this research, and do you analyze how you behave and the reasons that you do things now?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because I think the main takeaway from the book is I was a little worried at the beginning, like, oh God, does this mean we're all just puppets of our neurology and men and women are super different? That doesn't feel like progress. But actually the main takeaway is it's nature, but it's also nurture. And we also can override our biological impulses, and we can also choose the way we behave. And that was really empowering to me. You can sort of rewire your brain if you choose to, or you can override. Like, your brain can say, like, I want to gossip, but you can go like, you know what, I'm not going to do that, because that could hurt someone's feelings. Like, you know, we do have empathy, and we do have more control over our brains than we think. So that's, I like that.
And you co-wrote this with a very funny comedian, Neil Brennan, who is also good friends with Seth.
Yes,
You guys, you told me that you were trying to come up with some jobs for the characters in the movie.
And
was that hard to figure out?
It's so hard, which is so weird, because that sounds like the easiest part of writing a movie, but it actually might have taken us the longest, because, you know, we really wanted to make a comedy that was unconventional and that felt fresh. And, you know, so many people have seen so many romantic comedies. There's so much out there. And we didn't want it to feel like a formulaic traditional rom-com. So, you know, it took us so long to figure out what original jobs were. You know, every romantic comedy, that she works at a magazine, or, you know, she works in an app. Like, that's the new one. So we did have sort of a funny moment where we were trying to think of jobs, and I was like, what about for the character Lexi? And he was just like, not a nurse. like it's just, we all have that one thing in our head that I guess as artists that stick with us, that we're trying to avoid. You know, and I kept being like, okay, well, not an advertising executive. Like, we were both like so defensive around the idea of putting like a corny job in it.
You wrote a book since the last time you were here. How was that process for you in terms of actually sitting down and writing a book?
It's a living nightmare, Kevin. Uh-huh. It's awful. I thought that writing a book was going to be like, you know, you see it in movies, like you see like people like at the beach writing their book, like in a cottage, like, and then I like look back and I was like, oh my God, a lot of the great authors that I admire like killed themselves. Like, it's horrible. They were alcoholic, drug addicts, like miserable people. It was really hard for me. I'm not going to pretend like it was easy or sexy or romantic. I really struggled, and I had to like chain myself to a desk every day and just like bang it out. And, you know, I definitely had a really hard time. Yeah. Thank God marijuana is legal in California. Uh-huh. That was helpful. It was like my back hurt, injured me. Like, yeah. I hurt myself writing a book.
How long did it take?
Oh God. It took about 5 or 6 months, mm-hmm. like all day, every day. Yeah. And then you get notes, and then you have to read. And then basically you work for 6 months and you're like, I finally finished it. And then you get this document back with your book that's just covered in red. Like, the editor just has notes on everything and basically is like, you can't spell. I guess I don't know how I got a book deal, because I'm illiterate. My syntax was wrong. Like, so then you have to kind of rewrite it based on their notes, because they're like, this is not, we can't release this, you moron. You have to like write in complete sentences. Also, they pointed out that I said the word literally I think it was like 250 times in the book, because I'm like, I literally didn't know what to do. I literally, and they're like, yeah, that is like terrible English. So the good news is, if I can write a book, anyone can write a book. So go for it.
5 or 6 months, that seems pretty quick.
It was actually like every 2 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. Yeah. And then I used a couple words wrong. And then there were some phrases that I didn't know, like that they pointed out to me. Like I kept going, like, it was the best thing since life's bread. And they're like,
life's
what's
bread?
Yeah. They were like, what's life's bread? I was like, you know, like life's bread. They're like, I think it's sliced bread. And I was like, oh my God, I've been saying that wrong this whole time. I also thought it was, let's play it by ear. And they were like, no, it's play it by ear. And I was like, no, it's not. Like, no one ever correct. I've been saying that for 15 years and nobody told me, you know? So, like, I learned a lot, mostly that I am an idiot.
Well, congrats on the movie. It's fantastic. It's really fun to watch. And it's got a great cast. Blake Griffin, who's amazing.
Amazing.
Cecily Strong, Deanne Cole, Sofia Vergara.
And it's you know, we really sort of unapologetically wanted to make a science comedy. You know, it is a lot. I get so excited when people watch it and they're like, I just learned so much. You know, it's sort of like a really funny TED Talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Made a sci-com.
Yes, a sci-com. Yeah. We're like, right. It's like Magic School Bus for adults.
Yeah.
With boobs. In it. Not adults with boobs. I mean, most adults have, you know what I mean. So yeah, we wanted to sort of like make a movie that didn't make you stupider.
That's great. Thanks for being here and congrats on the movie.
Thanks, Kevin.
You know our guest from his work on The Daily Show. He is the co-creator and star of The Detour, which airs Tuesday nights on TBS. Please welcome to the show, Jason Jones, everyone.
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my God. Thanks for being here. Congratulations on season 3 of this show.
Thank you.
You are a co-creator of the show. You're the showrunner of the show.
I am.
You're also in it. There are scenes where you have fights. There are fires. There is nudity for yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you ever regret, once you start shooting it, that you made yourself do those things?
I have no one to blame but myself.
Yeah.
When it's not just fire, I lit myself on fire.
Yeah.
Which turns out is hot.
Yeah. yeah, that's like the the key thing everybody knows about fire.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Especially when I say, can you put like more gasoline on me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets really hot.
And is it something like in the moment when you're actually now on fire, do you think back to the writer's room in the moment where it came up and that you didn't spike it then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. That's what you think.
Yeah, yeah. There was one moment I was actually on a snowmobile. I did this jump on a snowmobile into a river, and then it goes down to the river, and these safety guys come up to me and say, you know, the worst that's going to happen is, like, the snowmobile, like, rolls over on you, and you're pinned for, like, a minute. Yeah, but we'll be there. We'll be there. You can hold your breath for a minute, right?
That is so much worse than it's the worst I thought could happen.
I know.
Your kids. So you co-created this show with your wife, Sam B.
Yes.
Who's also very talented. And you guys have kids, and your kids have gotten to be in episodes. They don't play your children in the show, but they got to be sort of extras. Did they enjoy it?
No. My son was like a featured actor.
Great.
He plays young me.
Oh, fantastic.
On the show. And my daughters were extras, and I cut them.
Oh, wow. Now, that's rough.
I know.
That's rough to begin with, but then with your son having a plum roll, that's really rough.
Yeah, and his paycheck is giant.
Yeah.
And theirs is nothing.
how do you tell your kids they're cut?
I was like, listen, your scene was good.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
Sure.
But I gave them a scene. I actually gave them a speaking role in the next season. That was season 1. I cut them. Season 2, I gave them the speaking role, and they were mad at me because they liked their part better in the first season.
Oh, no.
I'm like, you get paid now. You did it for free as an extra.
But they
now
have taste. Paid. They have to. They I just didn't. So, yeah. They didn't care for the new scene. you're obviously a writer. You're an actor. You're a comedian.
Yes.
Don't take this the wrong way. I would not have guessed that you began in modeling, but you had an early modeling career.
You're suggesting that I'm an ugly child.
No, I'm not at all.
You're not wrong.
No. How did modeling start for you?
It started like any child model. My grandmother owned a bridal boutique.
There you go. Perfect.
And they're like, he can fit into a dress. Yeah.
You actually sent some photos. This is not bridal work.
This is no. This is my later work.
Later work. So this is pretty. I mean, this is rad, and that's the word we use then to
that's
describe
right.
that look.
That's right.
So what is the brand here that you're?
I don't leather pants. I don't know. Well, there's a story because show this one.
Yeah, this one is this fantastic. I was saying, and that's the. I mean, that's fantastic.
So, well, it's not fantastic because he was not a great Michael Jackson impersonator.
Okay.
And I was really mad that I had to just sit on the bench and snap.
Interesting.
Because I could do the moonwalk way better than him. And
gotcha.
And I didn't understand at the time, as a child, that maybe me playing Michael Jackson's probably not the best casting choice.
Yeah. That if you were opening a catalog and they went with you instead of the other kid.
Well, funny story. I meet this kid again on a casting call, a go-see, guess you could.
A go-see, sure.
That's a little modeling lingo for you. So I meet him again, and we're both up for this department store shoot. It's called Robinson's, which is like the Gimbals of Canada. And and we were up for the role of Mr. T for a Halloween shoot. And guess who got it?
You booked Mr. T?
I booked Mr. T.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Don't clap for that.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have booked Mr. T. Because it was a short sleeve outfit, and they didn't give me a shirt to wear. So it was just a black mask with white arms.
That is...
And a sign that said, I mean, Mr. T on the plastic outfit.
That is rough. That really speaks volumes about how bad this guy was at impressions.
He didn't even have to talk.
Yeah, but that's who I pity.
I pity him.
Thanks for being here. Congrats on the show. Okay, always a pleasure to see you, man. Jason Jones, The Detour, airs Tuesday nights on TBS.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Jason Jones from The Detour.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking with Seth, the wife of Samantha Bee.
Yes.
When Sam was here a few months ago, she was telling us the incredible story of how you guys met. Can you tell us about that?
The story of us meeting was, it's been widely reported that we met doing children's theater, which is just a lie, because it was actually a Sailor Moon show, which is nowhere near theater. she played the very envious role that I wanted of Sailor Moon, mm-hmm. and I played Tuxedo Mask in the B cast. So we didn't actually work together too much. I was always, you know, hoping I would be on her show, but never got on her show. Maybe twice we did it together.
And the shows were in malls.
They were in malls, yes, and like fall festivals, cider fests.
Great.
You know, yeah, which are like, that's where you want to be as an actor.
Yeah, you want to be somewhere where there's a lot of other things to do.
Yes, you want to be where everyone's walking through your show.
Yeah,
yes.
The audience should have options for what can take their mind away.
Shortcutting to the Cinnabon.
So when did you start getting interested in comedy, or were you interested in comedy at this point and stuck in the Sailor Moon job?
I think I was actually doing sketch comedy at the time. Uh-huh. Did I tell you the story? This the Saturday Night's Main Event story?
No, you did not.
Tell me. Oh, okay. So I was a giant wrestling nerd.
Oh, great.
Loved wrestling. And once a month I would get to stay up and watch Saturday Night's Main Event, which was on Saturday nights on NBC at 11:30. And I was like, yeah, wrestling's on. And then one day I thought it was on and it wasn't. And this sketch comedy show was on called Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
I heard of it.
I think it
tapes
might,
about 40 feet from here.
I think it might still be on. I'm not sure. And I was like, what is this? This is awesome. Like, it was like during the, you know, Phil Hartman, Dana Carvey, like, Jan Hooks, Nora Dunn. Dennis Miller was doing the news, which I didn't understand at the time.
Sure.
I probably still don't. but it was just such a, John Lovitz was on the show. It was, and Kevin Nealon was such a great show. So funny that then I started staying up again. And when wrestling would come on, Saturday Night's Main Event would come on, I would be upset. I'd be like, why is SNL not on? Yeah, so ever since then, I really started loving comedy. And then when I was in theater school and I was taking myself way too seriously. Yeah.
Like all theater students.
Like all theater students. Which, it's part of the game.
Yeah.
You have to. Kids in the Hall was taping like a block away from us and no one really knew them. I loved them. So we would go see them like every Friday night. We'd go and get drunk at the bar first and then go over and watch those guys. And they were phenomenal.
Where'd you go to school?
It was a place called Ryerson Theatre School in Canada.
Oh, fantastic.
Toronto.
Over a certain amount of years, you end up at The Daily Show. Were you interested in political comedy?
It was my favorite show.
Uh-huh.
It didn't come up to Canada till John... so we never saw the Kilbourne years. I've gone back and seen them, obviously,
sure.
but I never saw them live. And then, it was my favorite show. And what I would never wanted to be John, but I was always loved with Stephen and Steve Carell did. Uh-huh. Like, it was just such a, I was like, yeah, I'd love to do that. That looks so fun. And then lo and behold, I just, you know, 5-6 years later, I was doing the exact same thing they were doing, right, which was pretty surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it, so now you're doing The Detour, you've got other projects, mm-hmm, but The Detour is not, it's a sitcom, it's on a political show.
No. We infuse a couple, sure, couple political, yeah, but it is not, yeah,
there are political jokes show in it, yes, right? I'm wondering, correct, if, yeah, after doing so many political jokes and so much political satire during the Bush Obama years, mm-hmm, if you miss that, or if now in these Trump years there's so much political comedy, it's nice just to be doing a sitcom where you don't have to do all political comedy.
Yeah, I don't miss it at all. Uh-huh. You know, I don't. It's almost, it's just, it's too easy now. You know, I always like
so
to,
much of it too.
Yeah, yeah, it's just so much. Like, it's just every night. Uh-huh. It's just a barrage of just how dumb this guy is, or like, it's just, you know, it's just, there's just so much of it, and yeah, and I tire of it very quickly, and right, because you get it all day in the news, you can't escape it.
No, you cannot know? Escape it.
So what I like doing is just doing a bit of escapism for people, which is like a half hour of just fun family around and
full of jokes.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
a joke fest.
It's so funny.
Yeah, thank you.
When you started taking over the show, what was it like, kind of transitioning from Daily Show correspondent / comedian / actor to showrunner? What was that, taking on those responsibilities like?
You know, I mean, we on the Daily Show, we did these field pieces, yeah, and we'd go out in the field, and you're responsible to bring back basically 5 minutes of comedy, uh-huh, and you had to tell a story in that. So it wasn't really too much different than that. Now instead of 5 minutes, we're doing 22 minutes. And, you know, we have to still have beginning, middle, end, tell a story and right, make it funny. So, and now we're working with actors, which is way easier than working with real people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
getting them to say stuff.
I'm sure you have millions of stories of just the people that you interact with, oh, as, yeah, these Daily Show, oh, yeah, Daily Show characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're just, you know, and I've met some of the nicest people I've ever met, sure, traveling on the road, especially in the South. Like, just, uh-huh, like, what the hospitality that we got from people was just, yeah, it's just exceptional, almost too much. It was kind of annoying at times.
How often were you traveling? I imagine pretty frequently.
Yeah, I'd go out probably, you know, I shot well over 100 of those things, in, uh-huh, you know. And they're not easy to shoot. I would say every other week, yeah, we'd be on a, like a 3-4 day trip.
And now you're because now this season takes place in Alaska, but you shot it in Canada.
We shot it in Alberta. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So yeah, all your comedy is a flight away.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Well, I did manage to get season 2 of The Detour in New,
yeah,
York.
That's true. And, the, yeah, second season was here,
but it was like I wasn't here, because, yeah, when you go and shoot these things, you're I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning and, yeah, get home at 11 at night, you know, yeah, and you just, your kids are asleep, and you're like, I'm like, why am I here? Why aren't I just being a, I just get a hotel.
on that note, let you get out of here.
Yeah.
Go see the family. Jason, thank you so much. It was
thank
such
you
a pleasure meeting
thank you.
You. Congrats on the show.
Thanks, man.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first, because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8+ acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy Egg.